Chapter 4. He had been caught in a trap. Now he was escaping. Cale did not think of his departure from the village of Glay as the result of a decision. He had wanted to leave for so long that the purpose seemed part of his body hunger, like the need to eat or drink. But the impulse had grown dim and undefined. Baffled by his father, he had turned an unfriendly eye on everything that was of the village, and his obstinate defiance was matched at every turn by the obdurate qualities of his prison. Until now. Just why the cage had opened was obscure. There was the weapon shop girl, of course. Slender, her gray-green eyes intelligent, her face well-formed and carrying about her an indefinable aura of a person who had made many successful decisions, she had said, he remembered the words as if she were still speaking them, "Why, yes, I'm from Imperial City. I'm going back there Thursday afternoon." This Thursday afternoon, she was going to the great city while he remained in Glay. He couldn't stand it. He felt ill, savage as an animal, in his desire to go also. It was that, more than his quarrel with his father, which made him put pressure on his mother for money. Now he sat on the local car plane to Ferd, dismayed to find that the girl was not aboard. At the Ferd Air Center, waiting for the Imperial City plane, he stood at various vantage points and looked for Lucy Rawl. But the crowds jamming toward the constant stream of interstate planes defeated even his alert eyes. All too soon, his own vast machine glided in for a landing. That is, it seemed too soon until he saw the plane coming toward him. 100 feet high at the nose, absolutely transparent, it shimmered like a jewel as it drew up in the roadstead. To Cale there came a tremendous excitement. Thought of the girl faded. He clambered aboard feverishly. He did not think of Lucy again until the plane was hurtling along over the evergreen land far below. He leaned back in his comfortable chair then and wondered, what kind of a person was she, this girl of the weapon shop? Where did she live? What was her life as a member of an almost rebel organization? There was a man in a chair about 10 feet along the aisle. Cale suppressed an impulse to ask him all the questions that bubbled inside him. Other people might not realize, as clearly as he himself did, that though he had lived all his life in Glay, he wasn't really village. He'd better not risk a rebuff. A man laughed. A woman said, "But darling, are you sure we can afford a tour of the planets?" They passed along the aisle, Cale assessing the casualness with which they were taking the trip. He felt enormously self-conscious at first, but he also gradually grew casual. He read the news on his chair stat. With idle glances, he watched the scenery speeding by below, adjusting his chair scope for enlarged vision. He felt quite at home by the time the three men seated themselves opposite him and began to play cards. It was a small game for tiny stakes, and throughout, two of the men were never addressed by name. The third one was called Seal. Unusual name, it seemed to Cale. And the man was as special as his name. He looked about 30. He had eyes as yellow as a cat's. His hair was wavy, boyish in its unruliness. His face was sallow, though not unhealthy-looking. Jeweled ornaments glittered from each lapel of his coat. Multiple rings flashed colored fire from his fingers. When he spoke, it was with slow assurance, and it was he who finally turned to Cale and said, "Noticed you watching us. Care to join us?" Cale had been intent, automatically accepting Seal as a professional gambler, but not quite decided about the others. The question was, which one was the sucker? "Make the game more interesting," Seal suggested. Cale was suddenly pale. He realized now that these three were a team, and he was their selected victim. Instinctively, he glanced around to see how many people were observing his shame. To his relief, nobody at all was looking. The man who had been sitting 10 feet away was not in sight. A stout, well-dressed woman paused at the entrance of the section, but turned away. Slowly, the color trickled back into his face. So they thought they had found someone who would be an easy mark, did they? He stood up, smiling. "Don't mind if I do," he said. He sat down in the vacant chair across from the yellow-eyed man. The deal fell to Cale. In quick succession, and honestly, he dealt himself a king down and two kings up. He played the hand to the limit, and even with the low stakes, eventually raked in about 4 credits in coins. He won 3 out of the next 8 games, which was below average for him. He was a Caledetic, with temporary emphasis on automatic skill at cards, though he had never heard the word. Once, 5 years before, when he was 17, while playing with four other boys for credit 20ths, he won 19 out of 20 games of showdown. Thereafter, his gambling luck, which might have rescued him from the village, was so great that no one in Glay would play with him. In spite of his winning streak now, he felt no sense of superiority. Seal dominated the game. There was a commanding air about him, an impression of abnormal strength, not physical. Cale began to be fascinated. "I hope you won't be offended," he said finally, "but you're a type of person who interests me." The yellow eyes studied him thoughtfully, but Seal said nothing. "Been around a lot, I suppose," said Cale. He was dissatisfied with the question. It was not what he wanted. It sounded less than mature. Seal, mere gambler though he was, towered above such a naive approach. But he replied this time. "A bit," he said noncommittally. His companion seemed to find that amusing. They both guffawed. Cale flushed, but there was a will in him to know things. "To the planets?" he asked. No answer. Seal carefully studied the cards that were down, then raised a credit 40th. Cale struggled against the feeling that he was making a fool of himself. Then, "We all hear things," he said apologetically, "and it's sometimes hard to know what's true and what isn't. Are any of the planets worth going to?" The yellow eye studied him now with amusement. "Listen, fella," said Seal impressively, "don't go near them. Earth is the heaven of this system, and if anybody tells you that wonderful Venus is beckoning, tell them to go to hell. That's Venus. Hell, I mean. Endless sandstorms. And one day, when I was in Venusberg, the temperature rose to 84 centigrade. He finished. "They don't tell you things like that in the ads, do they?" Cale agreed hastily that they didn't. He was taken aback by the volubility of the reply. It sounded boastful, like he couldn't decide. But the man was abruptly less interesting. He had one more question. "Are you married?" he asked. Seal laughed. "Married? Listen, my friend, I get married every place I go. Not legally, mind you." He laughed again significantly. "I see I'm giving you ideas." Cale said, "You don't have to get ideas like that from other people." He spoke automatically. He hadn't expected such a revelation of character. No doubt Seal was a man of courage, but the glamour was gone from him. Cale recognized that it was his village morality, his mother's ethics, that were assessing the other. But he couldn't help it. For years he had had this conflict between his mother's credos and his instinctive awareness that the world outside could not be compressed into the mores that encompassed village life. Seal was speaking again heartily. "This boy is really going to be somebody in Everglorious Isher, eh, boys? And I'm not overstating, either," he broke off. "Where do you get all those good cards?" Cale had won again. He raked in the pot and hesitated. He had won 45 credits and knew he had better quit before he caused irritation. "I'm afraid I'll have to stop," he said. "I've got some things to do. It's been a pleasure." He faltered, breathless. A tiny, glittering gun peered at him over the edge of the table. The yellow-eyed man said in a monotone, "So you think it's time to quit, eh?" His head did not turn, but his voice reached out directly at his companions. "He thinks it's time to quit, boys. Shall we let him?" It must have been a rhetorical question, for the henchman merely grimaced. "Personally," the leader went on, "I'm all in favor of quitting. Now, let me see," he purred. "According to the transparency, his wallet is in his upper right-hand breast pocket, and there are some 50-credit notes in an envelope pinned into his shirt pocket. And then, of course, there's the money he won from us in his trouser pocket." He leaned forward, and his strange eyes were wide open and ironic. "So you thought we were gamblers who were going to take you somehow? No, my friend, we don't work that way. Our system is much simpler. If you refused to hand over or tried to attract somebody's attention, I'd fire this energy gun straight into your heart. It works on such a narrow beam that no one would even notice the tiny hole in your clothing. You'd continue to sit right there, looking a little sleepy, perhaps. But who would wonder about that on this big ship with all its busy, self-centered people?" His voice hardened. "Hand it over. Quick! I'm not fooling. I'll give you 10 seconds. It took longer than that to turn over the money, but apparently the continuity of acquiescence was all that was required. He was allowed to put his empty pocketbook back into his pocket and several coins were ignored. "You'll need a bite before we land," Seal said generously. The gun disappeared under the table, and Seal leaned back in his chair with an easy relaxation. "Just in case," he said, "you decide to complain to the captain, let me tell you that we would kill you instantly without worrying about the consequences. Our story is simple. You've been foolish and lost all your money at cards." He laughed and climbed to his feet, once more imperturbable and mysterious. "Be seeing you, fellow. Better luck next time." The other men were climbing to their feet. The three sauntered off, and as Cale watched, they disappeared into the forward cocktail bar. Cale remained in his chair, hunched and devastated. His gaze sought the distant clock. July 15th, 4784, Isher. 2 hours and 15 minutes out of Ferd, and an hour still to Imperial City. With closed eyes, Cale pictured himself arriving in the old city as darkness fell. His first night there, that was to have been so thrilling, would now be spent on the streets.